Mic check.
Now it's time to start the show. Now it's time to start the show. Welcome to the Two Men Wolfpack. Every week, running it back.
Beam and Web try to act like they know. Now it's time to start the show. Yo, Michelle, let's go.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Two Man Wolfpack. As always, my name is Adam. There is no Brian this week because we have a special episode this week. Nick is in the house.
I'm back. Thank you for having me. But the real guest here is...
Yeah, Andy Greeter, back on the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, sports writer for those who haven't listened to previous episodes, sports writer for the St. Paul Pioneer Press, also known as TwinCities.com, covers Gopher football, Minnesota United FC, and most importantly for this podcast, the Minnesota Timberwolves. Andy, what is this, your fourth time, I think, on the podcast? You losing track? It's been so many times?
Yeah, I feel like I have. I think it's fourth. I think last time was like late spring that I was on, and... Okay. I always enjoy coming, so thanks for having me back.
So I'd like to have, we should start like a little tradition where we give our repeat guests kind of like members-only jackets. Sort of like Saturday Night Live, if you host three times, you get a jacket. I think Andy's, he deserves a jacket.
Oh, absolutely. I got to say.
Can I get some Jabot jeans to go with it? I feel like those are like a pairing made in the late 80s or something.
Yes, we will get you some.
Sweet.
It always amazes me when I ask people to come on, and you've said yes three or four times prior to now, and you said yes again, and every time I'm like, he's coming on. He agreed. Unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure.
So thank you for coming on.
Absolutely. I looked back at some of the lists of guys you have with Dave Benz and Jerry Zagoda. Who else have you had?
Andy Greeter also.
What? Sweet. So I did this other podcast, this other T-Wolves podcast.
Oh, yeah? Which one?
This guy I didn't know. It's called Holland T-Wolf.
Oh, okay.
So I went down to his place in Lakeville, and really nice guy.
Whoa, you actually drove to Lakeville?
I drove to Lakeville, and I was like, okay, let's do this. We had a great time chatting about the Wolves and everything. Then I heard that his next guest was going to be Chris Wright, the president of the Timberwolves. And then he said that PA came down to Lakeville and sat in his basement and was part of his podcast. This guy has some pull. I think it's...
So can you please stop promoting his podcast?
And our podcast is done.
I'm just saying you guys need to step up your game. No, that's not what I'm saying. It's just kind of a side note.
Yeah. You know, so we have an interesting history with Chris Wright. We tweeted at him a couple times. We said, will you come on the pod? He said he would.
Yeah.
And then we went radio silence on us.
Oh, no. That's too bad.
Same thing happened with Jim Peterson, actually.
Oh, that's too bad.
He said he'd come on the pod, and then he didn't. And really, we use your name, Andy, to get people on the podcast. So I'm the
reason that the guest well is completely dried up, huh?
No, you know, I think they're the reason they tweet us back. What? And then they investigate us, and they're like, okay, we're definitely not coming on the podcast. I think they listen to the podcast, and that's what the problem is.
No, you guys do a great job. I'm always happy to come.
Oh, well, thanks. Thank you. Thank you for coming on. You know, we haven't talked finals, so I just want to open with a little finals talk really quickly. We had an email come in from Bob, and his question was, is everyone now happy with the Kevin Love trade now that Cleveland won? Good trade for all sides? What do you think, Andy?
Well, I think that winning a championship is where the benchmark is for this trade now. I mean, that's something that can always be held over the head of Andrew Wiggins, even if he becomes an all-NBA type player that people think that he's going to be. It's going to be, well, has he won a championship? And people will say, well, it was really LeBron James that won it. It was really Kyrie. K-Love had some good moments and some times that he completely disappeared and wasn't on the receiving end of a high five, and there was bickering and all of those kinds of things, kind of lost in the shuffle. But he's got the ring, and that's something that you always strive to get, and that's what he has, and that's where I think this future talk about the trade will always be measured against, is a ring or not.
Yeah, that was kind of my thoughts exactly. Zach Lowe pointed this out a lot of times on his podcast over the last couple of weeks. The whole reason we have the draft and free agent signings and the regular season and we talk about it and talk about rumors is to win a title.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing.
Right.
And they won a title. So I think it's a good deal for all sides. Cleveland has to be happy with it. Yeah, Kevin Love's not who they thought he would be, I think. I don't know if he's going to be on the team, you know, at the end of the season next year. Mm-hmm. But if you're a Cleveland fan, you got to be happy with the trade, I think. You have a ring.
Yeah, for sure. I had an interview with Jay Sauvel, who's the Gophers defensive coordinator. He's from Ohio, and he's a diehard Cavs fan. Went to a finals game last year. And this was before, I think, game five or game six. Maybe it was game six. So it was 3-2. So they were kind of getting back into it. And I asked him that. I'm like, what do you think about the trade? Do you feel like this was a good trade? And his point of view was the Cavs are trying to win now. And Andrew Wiggins last year and this year maybe isn't as ready to win and have it all figured out.
That's absolutely true.
All figured out to be championship caliber of what needs to happen. And he was like, well, I'd do the trade right now again immediately. And he had no reservations about it because it was all about the here and now and not what could be in a few years, even if Andrew Wiggins, you know, becomes absolutely elite like people think he could be.
Yeah, I think I have the same take. I mean, it's really hard to win an NBA title, even with LeBron James. You know, he makes the finals every year, but he doesn't necessarily win. And Kevin Love definitely helped them win. Nick, you have any thoughts?
Only thing to add, you know, everyone criticized Love for being kind of mismatched against Golden State, but they overlooked the fact that he was a major contributor all through the regular season. And I think without his season contributions, they're probably not in the same position they were in towards the end of the year. Therefore, it's a good trade.
I think that's true. Closing note on this, because I want to get into some Timberwolves-specific talk, is Kevin Love on the Cavs at the end of next season? Andy, your thoughts?
Well, I think what is the determining factor is how do they do next year, right? If they win another title, then, yeah, let's keep the train going.
Do you think they seek to trade a mid-season at all?
I don't know. It depends on how things are going. I mean, given how much it seemed like he was and the team and him were on the precipice of, you know, just parting ways and shaking it up entirely, I could see us maybe getting back to that precipice sooner next time and be like, well, things aren't working. We need to find another scenario to make things click. But, you know, they are now NBA champs and that they've got that in their back pocket going forward.
Yeah, good for them. I think they'll seek to trade Love actually during the season. They're going to win the East no matter what next year, I think. But if they trade him or not, I think it depends on what they're going to get back for him. But Nick, Kevin Love with the Cavs at the end of next season.
I'm going to say no, but I don't think they really need to trade him. Like, it's just shocking to me that they can't figure out how to work him into their system efficiently. It is interesting to me, is like the, you know, a scenario where next year they kind of curtail LeBron's minutes and games played and let Kyrie and Kevin, at least on offense, carry more of the load throughout the course of the year. I mean, that's a deadly 1-2 pick and roll combination. LeBron can kind of just like sleepwalk through the regular season, save his body for the playoffs, and then you go back to Love playing like 18 minutes a game and grinding out that way. Now, is that a good use of a max player? No, but if you're winning championships, who cares?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Transitioning into the NBA draft, I think my only complaint about the draft this year was that it felt really close to the end of the finals. It was like 4 days after the finals ended.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted like another week to just digest the season before the draft happened. Just nitpicky on my part, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it did come pretty quick. I think that, you know, other leagues have done a nice job of kind of maximizing the whole calendar year and stretching things out and kind of having different, you know, times for build up and times for reflection, and the NBA maybe has it too jam packed there at the end. But I think what they want to do is still keep some downtime at the end of the summer. And I think if they were to push it back,
that's a good point.
So they want to just like shut everything down in August. And I think if they move things back, then they would not have that opportunity to do so. And then training camp would be right after free agency and it would just be full on 12 months.
Good point. Good point, Andy. That's why you're a professional and I'm an amateur, you know?
I don't know about that. I want to take vacation. Maybe that's what I'm saying.
That's true.
I'll be at Gopher football practice anyways.
So, Chris Dunn.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I was surprised that he was there, to be honest with you. I thought that, you know, given the steam that was coming in on him, he was the rising guy behind Ingram and Simmons, and he was going to be off the board, and that's why Hield and Murray were the two guys that I had penciled in at that spot, and I felt like it made the most sense because they were the better shooters, and that's the dire need of this team. So when I felt like he slipped, I mean, it's obviously a cliche, but he was probably the best player available, and I was pretty satisfied with it.
One question I have on Dunn, is there a consensus on his shooting ability? Like, I feel like early on, the big knock is he's not a consistent shooter, he's not great on the outside. Then I saw some of those, like, you know, Kurt Goldsberry shot chart type, like, little screenshots, and he doesn't look terrible.
Right.
I think his three-point shooting is, like, 36, 37%. 35. I mean, it's not...
Right.
So now, is it more of like a mixed bag? Like, what is the consensus from like people in the know on his shooting ability?
I think it's a notch below Murray's and a couple notches below Hield. But I think, I mean, like you said, I mean, it's still pretty reasonable, right? I think Murray, just off the top of my head, was maybe like 38 and Hield was like 41. Obviously, the three-point line moves back, like everyone knows, but I feel like they were just maybe a touch below those two guys. So, I mean, maybe it could be negligible, but at this point, when you're looking at it, I feel like that's maybe a slight differentiation point between the other guys.
He is Chris Dunn. He was a 69% free throw shooter in college, which was my only concern, because there's some correlation, sure, you know, if you look at a large data set between free throw shooting and 3-point shooting and overall field goal percentage.
Right. Especially playing point guard. I mean, yep, you want to be able to get to the line and be able to knock them down. And if you're fouled late in game situations, you want to be able to have a guy that you can go to, put the ball in their hand to be able to manage a game. And if he remains a poor free throw shooter like that, that could be a concern. I think it's interesting that Rubio has always been a good free throw shooter.
It is really interesting. And he's not a good shooter. Right. It's very strange.
Right. But it's routinely brought up as like, well, this is why he could maybe improve. This is why he could maybe improve. So it's that old broken record that I think people are kind of fed up with, and I'm sure that's something that we'll get into about the two point guards. So I won't ruin it. But
no, we'll be getting into that.
What I love about Chris Dunn is his backstory. I think it's awesome that he had to be as gritty as he was when he was abandoned by his mom.
It's unbelievable. And watching him when he was drafted, just like weeping openly, right, and just thrilled to be there and be a Timberwolf and in the NBA.
Yeah.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like he's articulate and composed. And he's obviously, I mean, it's also interesting as he's a couple years, I think he's a year or two older than Towns and a year older than Wiggins, and he's just in this rookie class. I think that's interesting that he's older, but in NBA terms, he's younger.
Absolutely. He reminds me a lot of John Wall.
Okay, yeah.
That's my closest comp I could come up with for Chris Dunn. They have the exact same size. They're both listed at, I think, 6'4". They both have wingspans between 6'9 and 6'10".
Which is fascinating. Like, I didn't know that until like some of the draft fallout, but that's, I mean, such an advantage on the wing.
It's a huge advantage. Which, 6'9", weirdly enough, is Ricky Rubio's measurements as well.
Hmm. Although he seems long, but
I mean, Chris Dunn seems bigger than Ricky Rubio. I guess I haven't seen him side by side, but just watching video, he just seems slightly bigger. I know he has a bigger build than Rubio, but Chris Dunn and John Wall in college had very similar rebounding numbers, assist numbers, steal numbers, field goal percentage, free throw percentage. Dunn was a little worse, 69 versus 75, and he was a better 3-point shooter, 35 versus 32.
Was Wall a one and done at Kentucky?
Wall was. So it's also a smaller sample size for Wall. Plus, playing at Kentucky is a little different than playing for Providence.
Sure.
You know, that was the closest comparison I could come up with. I hope Chris Dunn's a little better defensively in the NBA, but if he ends up being John Wall, I think that's a pretty good outcome for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that if Thibodeau has been he's been reserved in giving out praise to existing Wolves players.
Yes, he has.
And he's said that Dunn is a two-way player. So to say that about a rookie,
I think he really wouldn't say that about Karl-Anthony Towns. Like, he kind of says, yeah, he's had a good year, but has some things to work out. He could be a great defensive player. Those are the types of things he says about Towns.
Anyway, ask your question.
Bring it, Nick. Bring it.
let's say Dunn was a senior in last year's draft class. Where do you think he would have been, you know, put aside like where teams are drafting, where do you think he would have been ranked in terms of overall potential? Like, Towns is still one. Say Porzingis was like top five that time. Where do you think draft people would have had him slated?
I mean, wasn't it like in the teens, low teens? I mean, it wasn't. I think so. I mean, he certainly didn't have the buzz that he did this year, but he'd certainly improved from where he was. I don't want to think he was a lottery pick last year. I don't think that he was part of that mix. I don't know when he decided to stay. Like, I don't know if he tested the waters. Do you guys know that or not? Or was it just like, hey, I'm going back to college, I'm getting my degree, I feel like this is the best? I think that it was a good draft stock. I'm not as well educated on this, but
yeah, last year's draft, I think, was considered stronger than this year's draft. Right. Plus, he had a really good year this year at college, so that definitely elevated his draft stock. So I don't think you can just dismiss that. Another point, so Andy, I've been driving the Chris Dunn bus for a long time. I mean, nice. Months. I've been saying we should probably pick Chris Dunn. I also liked Buddy Hield a lot. Mm-hmm. I did not want us to pick Jamal Murray. Controversial in Wolves fandom. So every time we talk about something that's not pro Ricky Rubio, we literally get hate mail.
Wow.
We get like hate mail from fans. It's like people love Ricky Rubio. So
that's amazing, because I would imagine that your listenership is probably a minority of the overall fandom of the Wolves. Because I feel like,
I think it is,
just gauging the interest of the T-Wolves fans, is that most people are kind of over it. They're just like, let's move on. We got a new shiny object. Let's go in another direction. And it's interesting that you say that most of your listeners are big Rubio fans. I just think that's in the minority.
It's weird that Andy starts our pod basically promoting another pod and then talks about how small our fan base is. It's just terrible.
No, I did it. That's what you're interpreting. That's not what I'm saying. It's small. I'm just saying that maybe you have all the Rubio boys that listen to you guys. I don't know.
So most of our fans probably read the largest Timberwolves community out there, and they're very pro Ricky Rubio. The two biggest writers for that site have written many articles saying Ricky Rubio's, you know, underrated and underappreciated. Mm-hmm. So I think they're driving a lot of that, and that drives a lot of the internet Timberwolves fans. And they, you know, we get found on the internet by Timberwolves fans. So I think there's a lot of crossover.
Sure,
there.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's why people are so pro Ricky. That
I would hear here, Nick, this will make you feel better. Okay. I would say that the people that understand Ricky Rubio's value are some of the more educated basketball fans. And if you have pro Ricky Rubio fans, then I think that you probably have more educated basketball fans, in my opinion, because I'm pro Ricky Rubio and I know everything about basketball. So, no, I'm kidding. It's obviously a joke. Nick's eyebrows raised. Like, what the hell are you talking about?
So, Andy, just to wrap up Chris Dunn thoughts, and then we'll get into a bunch of other draft-related things. The number 5 pick comes up. You're thinking, you know, as a Timberwolves fan, you're thinking Chris Dunn or...
Yeah, I think so. Once he fell to 5, I thought that was the way to go.
I was too. I was thinking Chris Dunn. I don't think Nick was, though. Nick had a mini panic. He was shooting off all these texts to me after we picked Chris Dunn.
Yeah, I was really concerned about the shooting ability. Then I did some more research and kind of talked myself into it. Like, I'm much more comfortable now after doing a little more homework on Dunn. My only concern is I feel teams are sometimes biased against trading draft picks for established players. Like, you kind of like, you got a lottery pick, you know, you have all these prospects, and then by the time the draft rolls around, you, like, teams talk themselves into the potential players instead of being like, there's like maybe like a sixth man here, but we could trade him for Jimmy Butler, who is a legitimate two-way all-star in the league. Now, I'm not saying that's what they should have done. I'm not saying Chris Dunn isn't going to be a great player.
It would have taken a lot higher price to get
Jimmy Butler. Right, right. There's a price associated with that. But, like, you know, go back to, like, the Wesley Johnson draft. We took him 3rd.
Right.
Like, you know, Wesley Johnson probably shouldn't even be in the league anymore. Right. Like, if we go back in time, we should have traded that pick for anything other than Wesley Johnson.
Right.
And so you wonder if, like, you know, how many times that happened in a draft? Or why aren't teams more aggressive and just pursuing more trades as opposed to trying to win the lottery?
No, I completely agree with you. I would think that once you get maybe out of the cream of the crop, the guys that you feel like have the star potential, to find a person that person maybe projects to be, and take the person that already is established, because you know that that's a known commodity. I would definitely be more inclined to say, okay, this guy could be a 6th, 7th man off the bench. He feels a need on our team tomorrow. Not in 3 years. You'd think you'd see that more often.
Yeah, I get two teams in the lottery, obviously, are young and they're rebuilding. They don't want to maybe necessarily have a star player. I get all that stuff. But there are certainly times when it'd be probably more to their advantage, at least more thoroughly vet those options out.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Tom Powers, the columnist at the Pioneer Press, had a piece about some of the comments that were made about recent draft picks. And some of them were like, excellent two-way player, high ceiling, versatile, athletic. Who was that about? Oh, that was about 2010 pick Wesley Johnson. And then a similar line of superlatives and, you know, game changer, the best pick, the best value at this spot. Who was that about? 2011 pick Derek Williams. So I think that everything that we're talking about right now is unknown and uncertainty. There are potentials, there are things and correlations that you can find and potential and draft status and those kinds of things. But at the end of the day, we don't really know. And Derek Williams, in 2011, he had a great NCAA tournament.
He was the consensus number two pick.
Yes, right, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So I think that it's all like, well, we need to see this play out. With any draft, you need to give it 3 years to really see what you have.
I think that's a great point. And I think that's something everyone should keep in mind. You know, Chris Dunn, everyone's at least a lot of people are excited about, but you just don't know. I mean, you really don't. And it takes a while to figure out if it's a good pick or not.
How flashy is Chris Dunn's smile, though? That's what I think we really need to figure out, because the Johnny Flynn comparisons, you know, I mean, he was so much charisma, had this great smile. David Kahn said, what is Chris Dunn's smile like? Like, do we have a comparison there? I don't know. I wasn't there. I was on vacation. I need to find out. I mean, Marnie Gellner, who I really like, was praising how charismatic he was. I'm just like on a side note. I'm not comparing the two, but no, it seems like he has a good personality.
Very charismatic. So. Very good outfit he wore to the draft. I love it
that it was, he was the second guy that I saw, because Carson Wentz wore JCPenney's to the NFL draft, and he wore JCPenney's. I love that it's just like, hey, I know that I'm going to get a payday. I can have any suit in the world, but I'm going to stick with something that's, you know, a little bit more reasonable.
It's pretty sweet. Although I don't know how he finds a suit at JCPenney's that fits him as well as that suit did. Right. I mean, he's a huge guy. You can't just go to the store and find one off the rack.
It's probably not off the rack.
No, I think it's a custom JCPenney suit. And he looked pretty good in it.
He did. But didn't he also have Gucci shoes?
Yes, and they were pretty flashy. They had some sparkle to them. Yeah. Yeah, so they're good-looking shoes.
It's all about the accessories, right, Nick?
So let's talk about Jimmy Butler for a second. There were a lot of trade rumors before and after we picked Chris Dunn. The rumor was that it was hard for me to figure out, Andy, so I'm interested to get your insight into this, but it was going to be Zach LaVine plus Chris Dunn or the number five pick for Jimmy Butler. I couldn't tell if this was real or not, and I couldn't tell if we said no or Chicago said no. Twitter was going crazy with conflicting reports, and it was difficult for a fan like myself to figure out what was really going on. So, Andy, do you have some insight?
Yeah, I would say that the before draft buzz about a trade for Jimmy Butler was probably a more equitable price, being the fifth pick in Andrew Wiggins. That would be something that they would want more than Zach LaVine.
That's
and
what
the
Chicago
fifth pick
would want.
I would think,
do you
yes.
think that would, I mean, that would not, I would guess that's not something we would do.
Right. I think that's the Chicago goal, and the fifth in LaVine is the Wolves goal.
Okay.
If I were to guess about where they're trying to find a middle ground, would be those two. So that's my kind of inclination into it.
So,
and what I also think is interesting is then Derrick Rose gets traded, right?
Yes.
So it's more about where Chicago wants to go as a franchise. Like Paul Gasol opted out now, right? He's going to test free agency. Yeah. So what are the Bulls doing?
Do they want to blow it up? Do they want to build around Jimmy Butler?
Right. What is their end game here, right? Like if it's build around Jimmy Butler, well, then he's clearly not going anywhere. If they want to blow it up and rebuild, then you do something with the Wolves. I think that you could probably get more for Jimmy Butler than what the Wolves are offering, be Dunn and Zach LaVine.
So Brian and I had this discussion on the last episode, and that was my thought too.
Yeah.
My thought was I would do that trade, the number five plus Zach LaVine for Jimmy Butler. I would do that trade before the draft. I'd do it after the draft. I'd do it today. But yeah, I kind of thought Chicago could probably get more for Jimmy Butler than that trade.
Is it weird? I'm such a LaVine homer. Like I have an affinity for LaVine. I think there's still a ton of intrigue with him. Like he's had 2 years playing out of position for a year and a half.
Right.
The last year playing under a really like challenging culture under Sam Mitchell. I'm not trying to knock Sam, but he's not Tom Thibodeau. I'm thrilled to see what Tom is going to do with Zach on defense. I think you're going to see Zach improve even more so than he has in the past 2 years.
Yeah, he certainly has an upward trajectory. We don't know exactly who he's going to be. I agree that, you know, there is much more potential unseen with Zach LaVine than what we know of Zach LaVine at this point. Absolutely. I completely agree with you on that. As far as, is he going to be a top-notch defender? I don't know if he's ever going to be a top-notch defender. He could be a good defender, but given his body size, I don't think he's ever going to be able to have the girth to be able to push people around either on the post or on the perimeter. I think he's always going to have that slight frame. I think he can be a good defender. I don't know if he's going to reach that upper echelon.
So, Andy, do you do the trade? Jimmy Butler for number 5 plus Zach LaVine?
I would do it. Yes, absolutely, in a heartbeat.
Okay.
Yes.
That's kind of my thought, dude. No, Nick, without you doing that trade?
Yeah, but I'm gonna be panicked that Levine's gonna be a great player in like 2 years. I don't know. I really like Levine. What's the worst case scenario? Like waiting 1 year, have him learn under Thibodeau, have him potentially his trade value improve dramatically, and then go back to Chicago and be like, okay, we'll give you Levine plus our 15th pick because we're making the playoffs next year. Take it. I'm totally being a total homer and wishful thinking, but.
So you love Zach LaVine and you've loved him for a long time. I don't know if you remember, Nick, but we went to the Timberwolves draft party when we picked LaVine, and we picked LaVine and they announced it, you know, Timberwolves draft, Zach LaVine. And no one even really in the crowd knew who he was. Like,
One game in college. One.
Yeah, no one cheered. The cheerleaders went on stage and like there was some lights flashing. And Nick jumps up and he's like, yes. And you're like the only one in the entire Target Center happy that we drafted Zach LaVine. And that's pretty cool because it was clearly a good pick at this point. So
yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. I love the story of Flip writing his name on a piece of paper and putting it in his pocket before the draft started. And then at the end of the draft, after everything that happens, when you have the 13th pick, right, there's so many things that can happen.
Yeah.
So to put his name on a piece of paper, and then put it in his pocket, and then be able to draft him, and then Flip passes away, and then Zach now has that piece of paper and has it framed in his house. And it's kind of like, hey, this is the guy that believed in me. He did this before the draft even started day. It kind of gives me goosebumps. It's a great story.
So isn't that, I hope you haven't, but have you seen the movie Draft Day?
I have.
So that similar thing happens in that, right?
Yeah, right?
Kevin Costner puts it in his pocket, the guy he ends up drafting or whatever. So I wonder if they stole that from Flip Saunders or...
Yeah, I wonder which came first.
Yeah.
I know Flip watches a lot of movies. Maybe it was life imitating art. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Anyways, we've talked about draft day too much. let's move on. So the other reported trade offer that was on the table that I wanted to talk about, Andy, was it was reported by the Associated Press that the 76ers offered the Timberwolves the number 24 pick, the number 26 pick, Nerlens Noel, and Robert Covington for that number 5 spot. When I first heard it, I kind of thought we should have taken that deal. The more I think about it, the less I like it, but I still think that's probably a good deal for us. What do you think, Andy?
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have a whole lot of intrigue for me. I mean,
you're not liking it.
I don't know. I feel like I saw something, and this is maybe not as apples to apples comparison, but if you're drafted in the second round of the NBA draft, you have a 22% chance of making a roster on opening day. So I think that if you're later in the first round, the chances of you being a quality player, you being able to make an impact, to make a team, is much more difficult. So those picks don't really intrigue me as much.
Maybe with like a 1 in 5 shot of one of those picks ending up contributing in a meaningful way or something like that.
Maybe they combined have a 40% chance of making the team. So
yeah, okay.
That really doesn't do a lot for me, given how top heavy and how weak overall the draft was looked at this year. Nerlens Noel, I don't know, doesn't really get much
could
of a
play some
rise
defense,
for me.
Get some rebounds, has some character.
They need front court help. I mean, that's the second biggest need that they have. They need some defensive muscle in the front court.
That's true.
So maybe he could have filled that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of lukewarm.
Robert Covington, I've kind of liked Robert Covington too. So a nice little throw in there. But Nick, would you do that deal?
No, I'd stay away. I mean, those late first-round picks so rarely pan out. Unless you can push one into a first-round pick in a future year. And this year's draft was so weak. Nerlens Noel, like, what is he? At his best, he's going to be like a Bismack Biyombo, which is a nice tool to have in your toolkit, but not worth a number 5 pick, even with this little package.
Okay. Well, it's a good thing we passed on it then. So we have Chris Dunn. Andy, you alluded to this before. Let's get into it. Can Rubio and Chris Dunn play together?
I don't think that they're going to have to play together. I think Chris Dunn is a rookie point guard in the NBA. Uh-huh. And if he's a backup point guard, that's what the Wolves need. So I don't know how much of them playing together is going to happen. Because Andrew Wiggins' best position is the two. Zach LaVine's best position is the two. Rubio's the best distributor on the team. And those other guys are going to be, with Towns included, are going to be your high volume, high efficiency shooters. And I think Rubio's the best ticket to win now. So I think that Dunn is the backup point guard.
I totally agree. I don't think we should panic trade Rubio now, because rookie point guards struggle so much in the NBA. Like, right. I don't want Dunn to be overwhelmed. An overwhelmed rookie point guard is going to stall the growth of guys like Towns and Wiggins.
Absolutely.
That's what we do not want right now in their development. Like, so I say keep Rubio as long as we can. Give a chance to kick the tires on Dunn. And maybe two-thirds of the way in, you kind of realize maybe he's not that great. Maybe he's got some issues. But he still has some intrigue and high tradability. And so, boom, flip him for another first-round pick next year or whatever.
I think one of the biggest concerns outside of Ricky Rubio's shooting is his health. And he was healthy last year. He was healthy 2 years ago. But there are 3 years in those five where he has been marred by serious injuries. So if he's able to stay healthy for another year, then he's been healthy more recently and for an extended period of time, and that nullifies the second most concern for him. Then something that probably has an ability to shift the needle, while we can say, well, shooting, he's probably just is what he is. So the second biggest concern is health, and I think that if he's able to stay healthy, you push the needle and increase his draft stock or trade stock.
So what about all these rumors that Rubio might be done in Minnesota? We're gonna test the waters and see what we can get for Rubio. Do you think there's truth to that? Where are those coming from? Because I agree with you guys. I mean, why would we trade Rubio right now? I don't think that makes any sense. Right. So,
unless there's a point guard that you know can play to a similar level coming back in the direction of the Wolves, right?
Yeah.
Unless there is kind of an instant insert point guard.
That's true. It's tough, though, point guard for point guard trade.
Sure.
It'd have to almost be a three-team deal.
Right. So, I mean, we're not really talking something that's feasible, something that's feasible with this. So yeah, I think that you just need to wait. I think that there was, you know, a column yesterday by Jim Suhan that a lot of people didn't like very much. And I think that the one thing that he did make a good point on is next year is probably the time when you're talking about this. Next off season, you know what you have, and you have a better idea of what you haven't done. And then maybe it's opportunity to trade Rubio. To your point about maybe Rubio wants to leave, right? Someone at the Pioneer Press, a friend of mine, Marino Ecker, who does a lot of good like sports data journalism and tables and lots of different stuff. Everyone should check it out. Looked into how rare it is for a person that's played five NBA seasons to not make the playoffs, given the fact that the majority of teams in the NBA do make the playoffs and how much movement there is with young players.
It's hard to do, right?
It's very, very, very difficult to do. So to Rubio's point, it's like, if it's not working here, if they miss the playoffs again, you know, maybe he should go in another direction, right? I don't think that he is looking to get out by any means. I don't think that that's true. I think that he's shown time and again through all of the trying circumstances that he's committed here.
Okay.
And now everything that you see is leading in the direction of positivity, of playoffs, of ascension, and he is on board with that.
That's why I was kind of surprised when Rubio gave that interview with a Spanish, I think, radio station or something a couple weeks back, where he said, you know, if we don't make the playoffs, that, you know, I might have to look at leaving Minnesota. And, you know, we got some hate mail for even reporting on that. One person said, well, the interview is in Spanish, you idiots. It's like, well, we reported the English translation. I don't know what's wrong with that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I was going to say, so how does the drafting of Dunn affect Rubio psychologically? Like, that's sending a statement saying, hey, we're looking at a plan B because there are some issues here. And how does that impact the locker room, knowing that Ricky has always been a really good locker room guy? Does he check out at certain parts this year? That's my fear.
Yeah. Right. I think that in my experience, he's shown to be a team guy, so I don't think that that's going to be an issue. But sure, I mean, yeah, I mean, he sees who they got, right? And he sees that there is opportunities to go in another direction. But I think he's been around long enough to know that that's part of it, I guess. You know, I know that he doesn't really like being thrown out there in trade discussions, but I think he also understands it's part of the deal.
So what's Rubio thought of around the team? Like, do the other player, I don't know even how much of this you can talk about, but do the other players look to Rubio as a leader? Do they think highly of him? Or is there sort of like whispers like, you know, he can't even shoot, like those types of things. Like, what's your sense of how people on the team and in the organization view Rubio?
I think just in the locker room and seeing them interact, I feel like Rubio is kind of a glue guy, if you will. Like, he's, you know, saying, hey, going out to dinner here, you guys want to join, that kind of thing.
Okay.
You know, hey, Carl, you're going to Toronto, you know, good luck, man. I'll be watching you. Like, I feel like there's some real kind of good feelings there and encouragement. And I don't think that that's false or empty when he says it.
Like, it's real.
And yeah. Like, players are
actually responding to
it. Yeah. I think he's got the best interest, and I think he's a really team oriented guy. And I think it's reciprocated. He has been, you know, the guy that has with Towns been looked at as like the guys you go to for the last quotes, the kind of guys that are going to make the statements about, you know, what they're looking for and what happened and what didn't go well, and kind of set the tone through the media. And I feel like he always does a good reasoned job of holding it to a high standard that I think that they respond to. And it's always kind of high expectations, but broad enough where he's not calling out JJ Barea and Dante Cunningham, that kind of thing.
So there's no, you know, there's no whispers that you hear, like, you know, Ricky, he's always kind of riding us, you know, in a positive way, but he's definitely a vocal guy on the team. Like, oh, he's yelling at us and he can't even make an open three, or, you know, things like that. You don't get any sense of that. So he's definitely a leader on the team.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. No, that's good to know. That's always something I've wondered. So it's good to get some insight. I have a whole list of things here, but I want to talk about columnists for a minute, because you brought up Jim Suhan's column.
I did.
We've talked about this previously, I think on a couple podcasts ago when you've been on, maybe a year or two ago at this point. But I don't even know how to phrase this question, but a lot of the columnists out there, not even the Pioneer Press guys, I think the Star Tribune guys are actually a little worse at this, but they're kind of just old dudes with opinions, and they just come up with an opinion, I don't know where, they draw it out of a hat, and then they frame an article around it with no evidence. They have no facts, they have no statistics, they have no expert opinions or expert quotes. It's literally just like if I watched a Wolves game in my basement and didn't talk to anyone about it and just kind of like pounded out 500 words and sent it into my editor. And
Andy, what Adam's trying to ask you to do is just, can you just denigrate like half of your peer group?
Can you just talk a bunch of smack about guys you're going to see in the locker room tomorrow?
Good point. I know this is probably a little touchy for you, but how do we hold columnists to a higher standard than some of them are currently held to?
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say. Like, it's amazing to me that they're the thought leaders in the local sports market in a lot of ways, less so than they used to be because of the internet, but they still are. And they just kind of drive these wacky opinions sometimes. And it resonates with the fan base. And I wish there was more thought and logic put into their columns than Jim Suhan saying, well, Jim Peterson praises Ricky Rubio all the time. Well, yeah, he does. And Jim Peterson's amazing and super knowledgeable. And that's not, you can't use that as a piece of evidence to back up a hypothesis in an article. I don't even know if I have a question.
Yeah.
Your response, Andy.
I would say a lot of these guys have been in the business for a long time and have great expertise in what they do. I feel like there's going to be articles that come up that are hot button ones, like Suhan's was yesterday about Rubio. I read that. That was the first thing I read in the Sunday paper. And that was something that didn't resonate with me at all. I felt like there were issues that I had with it. And I know Jim and I respect him, and I feel like he does really good work, and there have been other things that he's done that I've really commended him on. He did, like, just off the top of my head, he did a great story on Milton Newton and kind of his upbringing and some really good storytelling and some really good narrative there. I felt like there's kind of two camps here, right? There's like the old camp that doesn't buy into the analytics, and then there's the new younger millennial camp that really is into them and kind of understands them and bases their opinion on them. And some of it's like, well, does it pass the eye test or does it pass the analytical test? And there's two schools of thought that kind of butt heads there. And I feel like the new school thought is, If Ricky Rubio wasn't on the court last year, the Wolves were not good. When he was on the court, they were much above average. And all of the analytics show that Rubio is a very valuable player. Bottom line, I think. And
so I'm not even a big Rubio fan, but I thought the column was not supported, in fact. And the analytics absolutely support what you're saying. I mean, you can't really argue with them. They do show he's a good player.
Yeah, for sure. And that's what I think is I think some people's issue with that column. It was my issue with the column is that it didn't really have the opening the door to the new age analytics that I feel while there's kind of an ocean of analytics, I feel like there are some that kind of you can parse out and really use. I mean, I think plus minus and real plus minus is something that's easily understood and shows value. It's all about points on the board when you're on the court or adjusted to the players around you and the players on the other team. I think those are stats that really should be used more frequently. And that's the stat that very much backs up the value of Ricky Rubio, as Britt Robson pointed out. And that was lacking in Jim's column.
Just real quick, I'm going to apologize on Adam's behalf. He is a new father. He gets like 2 hours of sleep a night. He's exhausted.
No, I mean, that's...
He's borderline. He's crazy right now.
That's perfectly understandable question. And I feel like that's something that needs to be looked at as old media, established media navigates the new world. How does it translate to new audiences when all the information and views are disseminated?
And, you know, if you're someone, I'm not trying to like stick up for Jimmy Suhan, but there's a difference between like a Zach Lowe column and
so Adam just passed me another beer, so he's going to ask me another question about.
But there's a difference between like a Zach Lowe column that's just grounded in analytics and film and embedded YouTube videos with showing you exactly how plays are run versus more of a kind of like, you know, jack of all trades sports columnist who gets paid to have kind of like hot take opinions. That will stir up controversy and stir up fans talking like the way we're doing right now. And I get when it becomes maybe too off base and all of a sudden they generate this consensus fan opinion that's not based on fact or any logic. That's where we get into the issues. But at the same point, that's not his job is to be factual. It's not his job to be like an analytical GM. It's his job to write entertaining sports columns, right?
Yes, and I understand that. I think there's a way to do it, though, where you're not Zach Lowe and you can appeal to the masses. And you can still write a column that would not get an F if it were in a high school class. Because, I mean, just the basic way of expressing opinions in writing is you have a hypothesis or a thesis, and then you have facts to back that up, and then you have a little tiny conclusion at the end summarizing it. And I know that form is a little hard to do in a newspaper column because you don't have a lot of words, but you can still get in some actual facts, I think, to back up whatever hot take you have. And the beauty of sports is you can find the facts. There's, like you said, Andy, an ocean of stats out there you can cherry pick from. Yeah. There's other experts who all have varying opinions. I mean, it's not hard to do.
Right.
So
I think I mentioned him earlier, but I think Britt Robson is preeminent in this market as far as I mean, as far as having a column based format and introducing, you know, new age ways of looking at the game and dissecting it and having the depth of knowledge that these columnists have, because all of these guys have been in locker rooms for 30, 40, 50 years, Sid's case, 70 years. You know, all of these guys have this wealth of understanding about sports and storytelling that make them, you know, what I feel is must reads. But there also needs to be evolution with it too.
That's true. That's a very diplomatic answer and a good answer, Andy.
Thanks, Adam.
Don't get fired. Look at me. I'm sweaty. I'm so like worked up over this. Okay. Speaking of Sid, the two-man Wolfpack is going to be applying for a press pass. We're going to get denied. Nice. But if we get accepted, how does that work? Are there assigned seats? Can we oust Sid and sit next to you at the games? How does that work?
If you oust Sid, there'll be less selfies taken then, which will be a good thing. Not selfies, but like selfies with Sid.
Oh, I imagine. I can't imagine Sid taking selfies.
No. Sid has an old school tape
recorder.
There's
assigned seats?
There are, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
You have an incredible seat at the games.
Unless it's close in the fourth quarter and there's action at the near end line. Then I'm watching the board. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's a really good seat. I'm very fortunate to have that seat.
That's like a, I don't know, $30,000 season ticket or something like that. Like if you were to, you know, think of it that way, yeah. I know you're not going there as a fan necessarily. You actually have a job to do, but right. Awesome seat. I'm envious.
Thanks. I know that you go to quite a few games and have a good time there too.
Yeah, my seat's generally a little worse, but yes, I do. Okay, let's bring this back. Thon Maker. I just want to talk about him. We talked about him on the podcast. He's such an enigma. He ended up being picked 10th overall by the Milwaukee Bucks. I thought he'd go in the 20s somewhere, so it was a little earlier than expected. But this is the part I want to talk about. So there's a whole Reddit thread that's developed in the last few days that basically has concluded Thon Maker is likely 23 years old. There's a photo of a yearbook, an overseas yearbook that showed him graduating high school in 2010. Is this even possible? Can you, in 2016, how do you fabricate an age by 4 or 5 years? I don't know. First of all, Andy, have you followed this at all?
I've not seen the Reddit thread on this.
Okay. First, I don't know if Milwaukee did proper due diligence or not. If he's 23, that's a lot bigger deal than, you know,
yeah.
than being, I think he's supposed to be 19 if I remember right. But I don't even have a question.
If that is the case and it's been underreported and not understood, then I feel like that's a wealth of an opportunity for a story there to find out what's going on. I feel like there is, like, you look at like baseball players, right? And they're coming from Cuba. There's visa issues. There's like an opportunity to fudge an age, but then we're talking about a year. And usually as the process plays out, it's like, well, they're in AAA now and they're actually 23, not 22. And that's usually the extent of it. There's never been, you know, a wide range of age disparities from what's falsified and what's actual.
It's weird because he came from Australia. Presumably he graduated high school in Australia and then came here and played for a few years. And Australia is like a really big basketball community. Like they have a lot of diehard NBA fans there. It's surprising nobody didn't see his profile on Draft Express. I'm like, this guy graduated from my high school 2 years ago.
That's my thoughts exactly.
And the weird thing is, like, right. Thon Maker was getting all this hype when he was, like, supposedly 15, playing against, like, other 15-year-olds when he was 19, 20. I mean, that's where half this hype is. So, I heard one take. It's like, well, who cares if he's 23? His talent is what it is. And it's like, well, a 23-year-old playing against 18-year-olds is very different than an 18-year-old playing against 18-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's,
yeah, right,
well,
yeah.
Plus, he's so raw that you can't really say, well, he's really raw, but he's so young. You can't use that excuse anymore. Whereas, you know, Chris Dunn, a lot of people knocked him because I think he's 22 and people are like, well, he's older. It's like, well, he's not raw at all. He's super refined. Like he's NBA ready. I think it's a lot different than Thon Maker. I just want to talk about it because I just love the story. I hope it comes out he's 46. I mean, that'd be amazing.
I love how you've basically just been kind of just shouting things at Andy. I mean, like, Andy, talk about this. Like, no, not even question form. It's like, you're so ornery from not sleeping, from being a new dad. You're just screaming and you just respond to your just banter. That's all it is.
No, it's true. And I think Andy knew it was coming. That's why he plugged that other podcast at the beginning of the podcast. He's like, this is going to be a miserable time. I'm going to plug this other podcast.
Hey, for the record, we've been talking about the rival newspaper, right?
Good point. To the Pioneer Press's credit, your columnists, Andy, I think they're really good. I think they do a really good job.
Yeah.
When I actually read interesting takes, I go to the Pioneer Press. When I want to get angry, I go to the Star Tribune.
No comment.
So there's a couple of news and notes reported today that I wanted to talk about with you, Andy, and Nick. Woj of thevertical.com has reported that Minnesota has declined Rudez's $1.2 million option for next year. Andy, your thoughts. Was this a surprise? Do you like the getting rid of Rudez or not?
What, did he play like 35, 33 games last year?
He wasn't a significant part of the team.
No, he wasn't.
He can shoot threes, though, which is, once again, going to be a weakness for the Wolves.
Right, absolutely. I mean, there was a Croatian newspaper that reported that like a month or so ago that he was going to be on the outs. I guess I'm not super shocked, and I don't think it has a huge impact. I think you do address the one point where it does have an impact of being able to hit threes. Speaking of Sid, I think it's always funny because When he's like, when there's a timeout, Rudez is like doing like this little warm up routine.
It's incredible. I went to a lot of games. Yeah. I love watching his stretching routine.
This little calisthenic thing.
It's incredible.
And Sid would always kind of tap me on the elbow. Oh, he'd love it. He'd be like, "What is he doing? What is he doing?" But actually, in my point of view, it's like it actually makes a lot of sense. I think because you're coming off the bench cold. You haven't done anything in like 20 minutes. It's like, if you're trying to get warm, trying to loosen up the joints, I feel like it makes sense. Like, we've got a soccer game, a replay of England-Iceland here, and if a player's coming on as a sub, they're going to be warming up before they go in. I think that makes sense.
It'll be funny when, like, 30 years from now, all players do it, and it's called, like, the Rudez warm-up routine, and they're all doing it on the sideline. That'd be awesome.
And Sid's still alive.
still sitting next to you at games. So do you talk to Sid a lot during the games?
Once in a while. One interesting thing is he was very critical of Tyus Jones this year.
Okay.
And Tyus Jones had a really bad turnover at the other end of the court. And Sid just slammed his pen down on the table. And it shattered into like six pieces. Thankfully, none of them were coming towards my eye.
That's pretty incredible.
He was that worked up. I actually put it on Instagram, this like mangled pen on like a box score. Sid was not happy.
I love that he's that passionate still, like,
yeah,
about the
right,
team.
Absolutely.
And, you know, whatever you think about Sid, that's really cool to see.
Yeah, it's a fun story to have for sure.
Let's talk about Tyus. Did we forget about Tyus?
Let's put on our, you know, revisionist hats on for a minute. Do you guys remember the feeling about Tyus?
The
last
parade
year?
That was thrown in downtown Minneapolis.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, we drafted this guy named Karl-Anthony Towns, but right. Tyus. We got Tyus.
I know. People had their Homer glasses on and they couldn't put one foot in front of the other without tripping and idiocy because he was the 24th pick for a reason, right? And people thought like, oh, hey, we got this steal. And it was shown last year that he is going to be most likely a role player and a fringe player because of his size, right? Yep. And I think that if anything, this Chris Dunn move really puts Tyus Jones on the block more than it puts Ricky Rubio on the block.
I think that's exactly right. I think Tyus is out of the league after his rookie contract. I don't think he's going to be in the NBA anymore. Nick, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't. It's too bad we didn't actually see him play much last year just to see what we had in him. Like, he does have a nice offensive touch, and he runs a really smooth offense. It was nice.
Defensively, though.
Yeah, he's just so small, and he's not laterally explosive. He just can't guard anyone in the league. And so I don't see a long future here, or a bright future for him in the NBA, unfortunately, because it'd be great to have like a local kid make it and do well, but I just don't think he has the physical tools to do so.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, like he has basketball IQ, he has savviness, he has poise, he knows the smart plays, yeah, he knows what to do with the basketball on offense. I just don't think that his size is really going to limit, I think his size is really going to limit him going forward.
I think that's true. Unless he could grow his hair like 3 more inches, maybe, that might help. I don't know. All right, okay. One last news tidbit, and then we just have a few minutes to talk some free agency. Brian Windhorst of ESPN reported that Glenn Taylor has sold 5% of the Timberwolves and 5% of the Lynx to Chinese businessman Lizheng Zhang. He's a 35-year-old. He bought the Spanish soccer club Granada CF earlier this month. Taylor also sold a small stake to Meyer Orbach, a New York-based real estate magnate. It sounds like Glenn Taylor is going to sell some minority pieces and stay owner for a while. That's the impression I'm getting by this article.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of made that clear when he introduced Thibodeau and Layton. He was like, hey, I'm in this for the long haul, 5, 6, 7 years. And that was kind of a newsmaker because there was talk about Steve Kaplan, yeah, the minority owner of the Grizzlies, maybe coming on for a 30% stake, and that being added to over the years and him becoming the majority owner. And that's kind of been shelved because he's been kind of attracted in Memphis. That actually is some news that Charlie Walters of the Pioneer Press had a couple months ago, and it didn't get as much of attention until the giant ESPN got its hands on it, and then it became some bigger news. But I thought John Krasinski had a nice note about that, given the fact that this guy is in sports marketing in China. This could create more opportunities for the Wolves abroad, in a market that has 1.4 billion people, and
it's a great
and had some great inroads made with Yao Ming. So I thought John Krasinski did a nice job of kind of fleshing that out and saying, hey, this could create opportunities for a global game to get more so with an up-and-coming franchise like the Wolves.
That's a great point. Nick, you have a hot take on this?
Not really. Anytime, maybe this is North Star PTSD, but anytime the local owner starts chipping away and selling parts of the franchise, I get a little nervous. But it looks like he's committed to keeping them here long term, and hopefully the new majority owner, whether it's 5 years from now or 10 years or 15 years, they're also committed to keeping the team local too.
Yeah, I think that's like the major point of all this is, you got the money, great. You're going to keep them here? Better. Now, then we could start talking about how we're going to make this deal happen, if and when that happens. I think he's shown that he's committed to Minnesota. He's a Minnesota guy. Obviously, there were some issues in the late 90s or early 90s when, I think, was it New Orleans or Charlotte? There was an issue there. But I think he's shown over time that he's committed to Minnesota, and he's certainly committed to winning because he's shown with the commitment to Thibodeau and Layden that he wants to do it soon.
Absolutely. I think this is great news for the Timberwolves. Who knows if it's new news or not. As you said, Andy, at that press conference, he said he's in it for the long haul. And I think that's unmistakably good news for Wolves fans. Glenn Taylor, I've criticized him, and he's been criticized by others for sort of having a country club mentality in running the Timberwolves. I think that's completely gone. I think it's a new regime, and credit for Glenn Taylor to recognize that he has real talent and, got to do something with it. So yeah. How is it so hot in my basement?
It is kind of warm.
Just like super warm. Okay. I just want to touch for a couple minutes on power forward free agents. Are we going to sign one? And if we do, who should we sign, Nick? Going to you
not,
first.
Not Harrison Barnes. I agree with that. Seriously, not. I don't know. Like, I was looking through
the Harrison Barnes. You mean U.S. men's national team player Harrison Barnes?
I mean, what's frightening is he's gonna get a max deal this year.
No,
he definitely is.
I actually think the playoffs cost him, I don't know, $30 million possibly. I don't think he's going to anymore.
He will find someone to give him max money.
Everyone's gonna get paid this summer, yeah. And he's definitely gonna get paid.
I was looking at the power forward list. I don't know, man. I don't see anyone there that I'm overly excited about, because I think we're still going to have to overpay this year. But then it's like, we're going to have to overpay again next year too, because the cap's going to go up. So it's like, when do you bite the bullet? It makes financial sense now to do it if you can find the right fit. And I don't know, who do you go after? Like Ryan Anderson?
Maybe.
I mean, he's a nice player. He's one-dimensional. He does one thing on offense for the most part. But he'd be a nice stretch forward to pair up with Towns. And Towns is a good rim protector, so he can protect him defensively. Other than that, I don't really see any like intriguing options from the power forward spot.
What about Dang? Or not Dang, Noah.
Noah's getting a lot of play that he's going to be looking to come here. What do you think? 2-year deal, probably?
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting is, was it Washington that said like 4 years? I think Washington might have said 4 years. Or that was something that was put out there, like multiple, more than just two.
Probably hard pass on that as a Wolves fan. I don't know.
Right, given his recent injury history, and kind of how things have shaked out with KG and someone at the tail end of their career and injury history, or kind of a lot of wear on their tires. But yeah, he's obviously someone that is going to have a lot of teams after him. I know that the Knicks are going to go hard after him as well. So he might be priced out here.
So Gene from Indiana sent us an email. Thanks for the email, Gene. Listing some guys that he thought would be affordable options at the power forward. Let's just, yes or no, are you interested in them or not? Jordan Hill.
No.
Nah.
JJ Hickson.
No.
I don't know. Not really.
Luol Deng.
Yes.
For sure.
Brandon Bass.
No.
Nope.
Jeff Green.
Yes.
I think so.
David Lee.
Okay, I have a soft spot for David Lee. He won the McDonald's All-American High School slam dunk competition, like taking his shirt off and doing a somersault. I thought it was like the coolest thing ever in high school. Anyway.
That sounds like a yes.
That's a no. It's basically a poor man's Kevin Love. We don't want that. It's a poor man's Kevin Love.
I'll say yes because I know that's what Nick really wants to say.
All right. I like it. Andy, thank you for coming on the podcast. Yeah,
absolutely. Thanks for having me back. Thanks for the beers.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me shout at you for an hour and try to get you in trouble at your job. I appreciate that.
I think I'm all right.
Nick, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all the listeners, especially the international listeners. We actually had about 12 emails this week. I only got to put in about 3 or 4 of them throughout the podcast. So we'll get to them next week. Keep the emails coming, timberwolvespodcast@gmail.com. Find us at Twitter @TWolvesPodcast. And make sure you're following Andy Greeter @AndyGreeter.
That's right.
All right. Pretty simple. Thanks, guys. Talk to you next week.